supporting WHYY Penn Medicine, helping to find new cures for cancer. With life-saving clinical trials and advanced surgical techniques, Penn Medicine is offering more hope for patients everywhere. Learn more at PennMedicine.org/cancer. Penn Medicine, what's next?
Support for Voices in the Family is made possible in part by the generous support of Devereaux, the nation's largest nonprofit provider of behavioral health care for children, adolescents, and adults with developmental and intellectual disabilities, behavioral disorders, and mental illness. Devereaux operates at 15 centers in 11 states throughout the country.
I'm Dan Gottlieb. Thanks for listening to Voices in the Family. Any of us who've been diagnosed with a life-threatening illness or traumatic news from a doctor knows that at that very moment, the mind goes into overload. Is there a cure? Will I have to live with this the rest of my life? What options are available? And ultimately, will I die? Initially, your only focus is on diagnosis and you're consumed by emotions, mostly sadness or terror. Our brains are wired to search for whatever fixes our distress. Well, traditionally, medicine has always used surgery or medication or both for the healing process. Well, enter Dr. Bernie Siegel with his publication of Love, Medicine, and Miracles in 1986. This opened the door to a new way of looking at healing. He's been exploring the healing potential of the human mind ever since then. He believes a person's attitude can actually affect change in the course of illness, and that the effects of love and laughter can help a person heal. Bernie Siegel is a physician. He's written many books, including Help Me Heal and 365 Prescriptions for the Human Soul. Bernie Siegel, welcome to Voices in the Family.
Thank you.
And if you'd like to join our conversation, the number is 888-477-9499. We're talking about your health and your attitude. If you've got a story or concern, would like to chat with Dr. Siegel, give us a call, 888-477-9499. So, Bernie, you started off many years ago practicing traditional medicine, but no longer. I'm sure you didn't learn much about love in your residency training?
No, I mean, part of what got me angry, literally. Well, let me say this. The reason I got started with this was from a patient of mine who said, I need to know how to live between office visits. I was amazed at how few people were interested in our helping them live. I mean, I sent out 100 letters to cancer patients expecting 300 people to come to a meeting and had less than a dozen women. And I realized that there was a special group that my wife labeled exceptional cancer patients. So that was an organization we started with these people. But the other thing that was fascinating, I began to do work with Elizabeth Kubler-Ross and got into art and drawings and all kinds of, and patients' dreams and all kinds of things as part of the therapy program. And when I thought I had learned something, I sent an article to a medical journal, and he came back saying, it's interesting, but it's inappropriate for our journal. So I sent him to where it was appropriate, and he came back saying, it's appropriate, but it's not interesting. We know all this. Yeah, that's when I got angry. The psychiatrists, the psychotherapists were aware of what I thought I had learned because they were caring for people. Dr. Carl Menninger, many years ago, wrote to me after he read my book and said, Bernie, I was going to write a book called 12 Hopeless Cases. They're all people who were considered hopeless, who are alive and well today, but I don't have to. You just wrote it. And I thought, that's the fascination. Larry Lachon years ago wrote, You Can Fight for Your Life. You know, as a therapist, again, in the hospital, he saw the benefits when he helped people straighten their lives out.
Now, let me take a different angle on this. I don't know if you have been forewarned about this, but I'm a psychologist.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm curious about the Bernie Siegel phenomenon, and what is it about you that despite wearing a white coat and stethoscope, you begin to think differently than the rest of your cohorts. I mean, this says something
about...
Yeah,
I think that, again, see, if you were a therapist, if you went to every medical student and said, why are you becoming a doctor? Okay, let's look at where Jack Kevorkian ends up, okay, in prison, and Bernie Siegel ends up in, counseling patients and helping them live. And I help some die, but I teach them how to stop living so they don't have to commit suicide. But, you see, that's what needs to be looked at. I went into medicine because I cared about people. I wanted to help people. And that was the painful part. You can't cure everybody. You can't make everything go away. People die. And I had the courage to look at my feelings and my pain rather than just bury it. Though I can tell you, I also was an artist, as a painter, and I painted a portrait of myself 30 years ago in a cap, mask, and gown, all hidden. And I realized later that was a sick man who was burying and hiding everything.
So that begins to answer my question.
Yeah.
When you talk about yourself as an artist, you're talking about that right brain thing going on that a lot of physicians don't
have. Yeah, and see, we don't have meetings where we talk about our feelings.
Well,
literally, a study done at Yale, surgeons asked, how does it feel to be a surgeon? They all said, I think what it's like. There are famous paintings out, the consultation, the doctor. People are dying, and the doctor's sitting next to the bed with his hand in his chin, thinking, not even touching the patient.
Well, I want to challenge you on that. I was going to ask you later about how training of medical students has changed over the years. There's something called Schwartz rounds that are, I know they're practiced around the country. We've got them here at University of Pennsylvania Hospital and Einstein and a couple of others, where they actually do just get together and just talk about their feelings around the
patient. Yeah, it's getting better, but my statement is it's like 20, 30 years behind where it should be.
Well, maybe even 100.
So it's nice to see it happening, but I think that, number one, I would, yes, make every student really analyze, why are you a doctor? I would ask every student before they graduated to spend a few days at least or a week in bed in a hospital, to appreciate. And look at the whole system, the insurance and the drug companies. It's hurry up, write a prescription.
Right.
I mean, you see ads in the medical journals. I'm depressed, unable to cope. I went to my doctor. He prescribed an antidepressant. Everything's wonderful.
Right.
I got the ad canceled because I said, how about asking me what happened? Why are you depressed? What's going on in your family? Not just giving me a pill. That's the sick and sad part. Yes, we're seeing improvement. A lot of medical students ask me to speak to them, too. But this is another interesting thing. When I say to the students, draw yourself working as a doctor, I have pictures with no human beings in them from some of these kids. You'd say, how could that be? What were your instructions? Draw yourself working as a doctor, and all that you see are computers, prescription pads, stethoscopes, and other instruments.
Yeah,
most of the kids draw themselves sitting behind a desk with their diploma on the wall behind them. And again, it's not about people.
I had an experience, it's almost a year and a half ago now. I had a pacemaker put in.
Mm-hmm.
So there I am in the OR, and it's kind of a bizarre experience. I was awake, I had to be, in this kind of twilight sense, and I hear people, one group of people on a computer and the other on my chest, and they're throwing numbers back and forth, this wave and that wave.
Yeah.
And they're communicating, and I feel my heart rate changing. And it's just strange and an alienating feeling. And I said, and I'm laying there on my side looking at this cabinet with medications in it, and I said, could someone please make eye contact with me? Could someone touch my face, please? I needed human contact.
Yeah.
And one nurse kind of bent down and looked at me with her mask
right
on.
You see, if one of them had been through it, see, they're tourists. You're the native.
Yeah.
That's what I try to get across, that people live an experience. They don't have a pacemaker inserted. They have an experience. And what I've learned to do is say to people, what are you experiencing? and how can I help you, rather than, you know, what's your complaint, and then some mechanical response.
There's you remind me of a Sufi saying that says, to experience is to live, to explain is to lie. Mm. Bernie, my mother used to say to me, she said, Danny, as long as you have your health, you have your happiness. I think she was wrong. You?
Yeah, you don't need your health to be happy. There are a lot of people, and I often show their slides, that I can't cure, but are wonderful people. You know, I mean, just think of Helen Keller for a moment. I mean, here's a deaf-blind woman who was an incredible inspiration and teacher. So I know paraplegics, quadriplegics, amputees, cerebral palsy, all kinds of people, cancer and AIDS, who will say it's a blessing, gift, wake-up call, new beginning. And those are the people I learn from. They're healed. See, that's what I try to do, heal lives.
Yeah.
Then you derive a physical benefit as a byproduct. But the key is, to quote Mother Teresa, I will not attend an anti-war rally, but if you have a peace rally, call me. So I try to help people find peace, love, and healing, and not kill the enemy.
Okay, so let's try to understand something. Speaking of anti-war rallies versus peace rallies, let me give out the numbers again, because we're going to have lots of callers, and I want to make sure we have time to bring them on. Our number is 888-477-9499. 888-477-9499. If you've got an opinion or a story about how emotions affect healing or your own history, give us a call. 888-477-9499. So, Bernie, are you there?
Yeah.
I was involved in the Federal Center for Mental Health Services in Washington several years ago. And I said to them, you know, they were talking about how to allocate all these funds for schizophrenia and homelessness and so on and so forth, which is well served. And I said, but we're the Center for Mental Health Services. I said, how many funds are we allocating to foster mental health? And what do we know about mental health? And I would ask you that. What do we know about health? It's got to be bigger than the absence of illness.
Well, I'm always saying I wish we would explore inner space instead of outer space. I mean, spend all that money going into the human body.
One's easier than the other.
Outer space. I think
outer space is less complicated, right?
There's so many metaphors and symbols. See, I'm trying to help people be what I call born again. In other words, find their unique, authentic life when they learn they're mortal and here for a limited time. The benefit they then derive from enjoying life. Our body loves us. We need to let it know we love our life. Then it gets an internal chemistry is developed that gives the genes life-enhancing messages rather than destructive messages.
Hmm.
So we are our chemistry. If you live in fear, if you feel unloved, all these things have negative effects on the body and immune function and cortisol levels. We know from studies now, you see, Bernie Siegel isn't so crazy anymore, that cancer patients who laugh live longer lives than those who don't. And the study from the American Psychosomatic Association was, it wasn't about reading jokes or being told jokes or going to a funny movie, it was just laughing out loud. Mm. So if you laugh, you again change your chemistry. And another study that came out was that loneliness affects the genes which control immune function. Now, years ago, W.H. Auden wrote about cancer in a poem called Miss G. Childless women get it, and men when they retire, it's as if there had to be an outlet for their foiled creative fire.
Hmm.
And when I read that years ago, an oncologist said to me, just because it rhymes doesn't make it true. And I have to laugh today because it's not just the rhyme. Here's the study
there's plenty of...
a poet sees and puts in his poetry. Because he's looking at life.
Yeah, there's plenty of research now to substantiate that position. Bernie, we're going to have to take a short break. When we come back, there's lots of people I see who want to join our conversation, so we'll bring in some others to chat with us. Bernie Siegel is a former, I guess, current physician, cancer physician. He's written Love, Medicine, and Miracles. He was on the bestseller, New York Times bestseller list for over a year. We're talking about emotions, beliefs, our relationship with our body, how that impacts our health, our healing, and our overall well-being. Our number is 888-477-9499. And I'm Dan Gottlieb. You're listening to Voices in the Family. It's right here on WHYY-FM, Philadelphia.
ChristianaCare supports WHYY and your efforts to stay healthy. ChristianaCare's Helen F. Graham Cancer Center is one of only 14 in the country selected by the National Cancer Institute as a community cancer center program. Patients are offered a team of medical experts backed up by the latest research trials, technology, and a personal care coordinator who guides them every step of the way. More information online at christianacare.org/cancer.
The past 100 days have been eventful with an economy in crisis and a new administration in office. President Obama has announced changes in our combat role in Iraq and our goals in Afghanistan. He's lifted the ban on stem cell research and ordered Guantanamo closed within a year. I'm Marty Moscowen. You turn to WHYY for access to the full story from a source you trust. Your financial support today makes this kind of reporting possible tomorrow. Give online at WHYY.org and become a member. Thanks.
And we're back on Voices in the Family. My guest is Dr. Bernie Siegel, a man who almost needs no introduction. He has really opened the door to a new kind of medicine, a medicine that starts from within. Bernie, I got a funny story to tell you. I said a man who almost needs no introduction. I was giving a lecture once, and somebody introduced me that way. Uh-huh. Man who needs no introduction. And I said, I might not need an introduction, but at my age, I could use a reminder. let's go right to the phones. We've got Nancy on the line. Nancy, hi, you're on the air.
Hi.
Hi.
I'm a cancer patient. I just finished my chemotherapy 2 weeks ago. I have small cell lung cancer, and I've read Dr. Siegel's books many years ago, and I'm excited now that I'm finished with Western medicine and I can start to do the healing stuff. But I get Bernie Siegel's has been accepted this idea that you can heal yourself, and a lot of people put pressure on me. If I say anything negative, they're like, oh, no, you can't think negative. You have to be positive. You can change this. You can cure yourself. And it puts a lot of pressure on me to feel like if I'm not doing a good enough job that I won't get better.
Yeah, and you've received a lot of criticism early on over the years about just that point, Bernie.
Yeah, the key is to do what makes you happy. Now, you see, there's nothing wrong. I mean, if they make you uncomfortable, you know, that's different, if they keep saying you're doing it wrong. But coaching, criticism, feedback is important. And I was talking about a man who had a pin that's the word attitude. See, his wife would walk over to him, twist the pin, and say, honey, straighten out your attitude. So whenever he would deviate from the path that was good for him, she had a way of saying it without, you know, being critical. They could both laugh, and he'd, look at what he was doing and his attitude.
Well, Bernie, and Nancy, Christopher Reeve said in his biography, late Christopher Reeve, he said that he would get up every morning, and for 20 minutes, he would feel sorry for himself. And that's what he allocated himself, is 20 minutes, 20
right.
minutes for self-pity, and then he moved on. But I think the point here is that all of these emotions wash over us. Nancy, you can't not feel anxiety or worry about the future. You can't not feel some self-pity. But, you know, all these emotions wash over us, and you know, one of the things I hear Bernie Siegel saying is that if you beat yourself up for having these normal emotions, it's going to make it worse.
Mm-hmm.
It's, again, you know, you can thank your critics, say thank you for caring about me. But, you see, if you grow up with love, criticism is not a problem. But if you didn't grow up with love, then, oh, they're telling me I'm doing it wrong. So how your parents, teachers, clergy, you know, all these things. If God gave you cancer, you should become more spiritual. I mean, there's so much sickness out in the world and problems that other people will project on you. So if somebody tells you something and it helps you, wonderful. But you're in charge of how you feel, okay? And that includes worrying about the future or enjoying the day. No one else decides what you think. You
exactly.
are in control of thoughts. That's it. So accept your mortality, but enjoy your life. Then you will add to the length of life you live.
Bernie, let me challenge you again here. There are many Buddhists who would say the last thing in the world you can control are your thoughts.
That is, well, what do Buddhists teach you?
The Buddhists teach
you
is
to meditate. Why?
Is to experience your life.
To calm your mind. See, it's the still water. That is the symbolism and why water is so important in so many myths, fairy tales, and religions. You walk up to the still pond and you see your reflection. But you need to quiet your mind in order to see the reflection, quiet the water.
Nancy, I think one of the things we all learn, and I hear Bernie saying this, but I'm sure you are learning this as I have learned it, that these kinds of things just really are a wake-up call to teach us how precious life is, you know, and moments.
Yeah.
It's just a wonderful journey here on Earth. And
and if guilt, blame, and shame come up, realize it was done to you by others during your childhood. Up to the age of 6, a child's brain is like that of someone under hypnosis. So when Mama says you're a failure, I mean, I don't make up these lines. I'm dressing you in dark colors so nobody will notice you. You embarrass us. I know kids who were told to go and commit suicide. I know parents who have committed suicide and said, I don't love you enough to not kill myself. You read the headlines. So if you grow up with those kinds of messages, you have to abandon your past and move on.
Yeah, Nancy, I do wish you the best. I wish you a very full life and great enjoyment in your life. Thanks so much for calling. Let's talk about, Bernie, this business of chronic illness, which Western medicine has only addressed recently. I mean, Western medicine is good at acute illness. So let's talk about living with chronic pain or suffering associated with other chronic illnesses.
Well, two things. First of all, you have to be sure that you help the person be ready to be free of a chronic illness, because there are people who enjoy their chronic illness. It's what gives them control over their families, gets them attention. The opposite of love is indifference, and worse is rejection. So if you're sick and you have a problem, people pay attention. So it's making sure that people are ready to be well. The other thing that I do with people is say, how would you describe what you're going through? What is your experience like? And I listen to the words they say: failure, wake-up call, blessing, draining, roadblock, pressure. And I say, how do those words fit your life? So we use the pain. Say, when the pain is like pressure, okay, what's causing pressure in your life? Let's try to relieve that pressure, and you'll hurt less. And it's also about relationships, you see, and connections and meaning in your life, because literally, you can keep your hand in a bucket of ice water far longer if you're surrounded by loved ones and if you're sitting alone. And that's true of having surgery, delivering a baby, or anything else. So all of these things become a part of the symptomatology. And here's an extreme example. What do you think happens to people with a chronic illness when they are put in a concentration camp and are told that if you can't work, you will have a bullet put through your head, or you will not be fed and you will starve to death? So what do you think happens to people then who want to live and are chronically ill and put in the concentration camp? Well, their doctor wrote an article because he was amazed at how the power of their mind rejecting illness because it had no benefits and now meant death, and how his patients were able to continue living despite the fact he had no treatment for any of them.
What? That's a little confusing. What concentration camp?
I don't have the name of the camp. I only have the gentleman's article that the doctor wrote.
Huh.
They were put into a labor camp where if they didn't work, it meant death.
Huh. Let's go back to the phones. We've got Nancy on the line. Oh, I'm sorry. We've got Lil on the line. Sorry. We had
Well,
Nancy.
You're a senior. That's all right.
Right. We had Nancy. Lil, you're on the line.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I'm a senior. I just turned 70.
You sound great.
And I'm in stage 4 of lung cancer. Mm-hmm. I've had it for 5 years now. I'm one of the 16% survivors of lung cancer. And I feel great.
You know, I'm glad you brought that up because there is another key word, potential. You see,
mm-hmm.
You could have heard the statistics 5 years ago, gone home, gotten into bed, and been dead in a month.
That's right. And guess what the statistics were 5 years ago?
Yeah.
4%.
Even worse.
So now, the new theme is I'm a survivor thriver.
Right.
I forget who put that out. I've chosen alternative methods. A combination of Eastern and Western medicine. I think both have their merits. I needed surgery, needed all kinds of things, and chemo and all. And then about 5 months ago, I thought, this chemo and medicines are taking my life, and they're not helping me. And they were taking my spirit, which was more important to me. So I decided to stop chemo and meds. I've had 5 quality months. And folks sometimes think it's a sign of giving up when you don't take every medicine that Western medicine wants to give to you. I believe it's, for me, it was taking charge of my life.
Right. Yeah,
and it
very
was making me the person who was choosing and deciding how I would move forward with that.
That's survival behavior that you make the decisions. I call life a labor pain. So you could say to somebody, here, eat vegetables, your cancer will go away, and they say, I hate vegetables, I'd like chemotherapy.
Mm-hmm.
That you made the decisions.
Mm-hmm.
And let me ask you this. See, based on the decision, was this, again, about the quality of your life or not dying? Because what I say to people is, if you're trying not to die, then do everything so you're not mad at yourself in the future.
Mm-hmm.
But when people say, I'm doing what's right for me,
mm-hmm.
Yes, that's
Lil,
the right answer.
So, Lil, what's your answer to Bernie's question? Was it about the quality of your life, or was it about not dying?
It was the quality of life.
Right.
I'm holding in both hands. I just went for my results after this is my last scan. They don't scan me now because, according to the doctor, that really I don't need it because I'm not taking medicine, and that's how they determine how much chemo, et cetera, they will give you according to the growth of the
mm-hmm.
tumors. So now I'll be treated clinically as needed. So for me, it's all these months since it was pre-Thanksgiving, I've had a great time. I'm
right.
doing everything I want to do with my family, my friends. I mean, it's life. I'm living my life every day.
Yeah, and
I'm not even thinking. You know, when I go for my scans, I think, well, I might get the worst news. It's racing through. She told me I do have active lung cancer. There is a slight increase. But I'm not going to come home and say, well, that's it. I'll be dead in a month. I'm going to keep living each day. Now, I have to use the word grace. Great grace.
Lil, I really appreciate your call, and I'm really happy for you. I'm happy that you were able to do this, and I'm happy you're able to enjoy your life.
Lil, let me add something that Solzhenitsyn in his book Cancer Ward talked about.
I don't think we have her on the phone, but I'd like to hear.
All right, well, she'll hear it.
Yeah, go on.
But talked about self-induced healing, and it is about, again, changing your life, because I know people like you, see, who didn't go home to die, but went home to enjoy the quality of their life. And one, who was a classic and became my teacher, lived to age 94. I had operated on him, couldn't cure his cancer. He was a landscaper. He said, I'm going to go home and make the world beautiful, so I'll leave a beautiful world when I die. Yeah, over 20 years later, he did die. So I'd say again, go home and live your life. You'll derive physical benefits from the joy of experiencing a life where you feel connected and meaning.
One of the things I'm concerned about, Bernie, and you know, I want to come back and revisit this issue again about attitude affecting healing. And when you're talking about attitude, you know, it does affect the body, but it doesn't automatically heal the body. It doesn't necessarily fix what's broken.
Well, everybody dies. So I tell people, if you're a vegetating, meditating jogger, in order to avoid dying, stop, because you're going to be bitter and resentful when you get to heaven. I'm not trying to talk about not dying. I'm talking about enjoying life. Then you live a longer, healthier life. Volunteers live a longer, healthier life. Why? Because they're doing what they love, and there's meaning in their life. So there is an immune-competent personality, a survivor personality. If you do these things, you live longer. And yes, your actions are your chemistry. If you put people in a play, this was done, and here's a comedy script, here's a tragedy. Immune function goes up in a comedy, down in a tragedy. Cortisol levels up in a tragedy, down in a comedy. So our feelings and our chemistry, and I tell people, act and behave as if you're the person you want to be.
Before we take our break, I want to talk about that. You've got that on your webpage. You've got an immune competent personality test based on George Solomon's research. So tell us about that test.
Well, what he found was, working with AIDS patients quite a while ago, he said here are a series of questions he could tell who's going to be a long-term survivor. Before I mention that, let me say this. Bruno Klopfer, psychologist, I think in the 40s, was given 24 personality profiles of cancer patients. He couldn't tell in one. He was wrong in four. But in 19, he correctly predicted who would have a slow-growing cancer, who would have a rapidly growing cancer, and all he knew was their personality. Now, what George Solomon came up with were these questions. Do I have a sense of meaning in my daily activities in life? Am I able to express anger appropriately in defense of myself? Am I able to ask friends and neighbors for help if I need it? Am I able to say no to someone if they ask for a favor I can't or don't feel like doing? Am I in charge of the decisions related to what is prescribed for me? Do I have enough play in my life? Do I use my feelings appropriately rather than get depressed about being depressed? And I'm not living a role in my life. I'm living an authentic life. So again, it's not mama or the wage earner. You're living a meaningful, authentic life.
Well, all of these things are great and important, and they really do change. They address issues of what psychologists call locus of control, like who's in charge of your life. Does it come from the inside or the outside? I've got to tell you, though, one thing that bothers me is the language, immune competent. I mean, that's a shame-based word. Are you competent or are you incompetent? It's troubling to me.
I don't know. I call it a survivor personality, so I don't usually use that terminology.
Yeah.
Because, again, you see, whether you're looking in the Bible, checking with Buddha, or somebody who has cancer or is an addict, how do you get over your problems? And you'll find common themes. That's what I look for.
Yeah.
Let me say this. I have a book that just came out. It's now called Faith, Hope, and Healing, with stories, inspiring stories by cancer patients, and ones we can learn from, and my what I call my reflections after each story. So, you know, we're learning from the people who have the experience.
Right. We're talking with Dr. Bernie Siegel, cancer physician, author of Love, Medicine, Miracles, many other books. He's going to be coming to the Jefferson Hospital, speaking at the Myrna Brind Center at Jefferson on May 9th. If you want to attend that, call 1-800-JEFF-NOW, and they'll give you tickets. If you want to talk with him now, our number is 888-477-9499. If you've got an opinion about what we're talking about or a story about attitude, emotions, and healing, give us a call, 888-477-9499. Well, I'm Dan Gottlieb. You're listening to Voices in the Family. That's right here on WHYY-FM, Philadelphia.
Supporting WHYY Paradise City Arts Festival, May 1st through 3rd at the Pennsylvania Convention Center. A fine craft show featuring home furnishings, fashion and jewelry, paintings and sculpture. Handmade in America. ParadiseCityArts.com.
Next time on Tell Me More, we often think of the homeless as unattached men or women, unmoored from society because of chronic drug problems or mental disabilities. But a new survey shows that one of the fastest growing groups among the homeless are families. We'll go behind closed doors to speak with a family who recently found themselves with nowhere to live. We'll find out why next time on Tell Me More. This afternoon at 1 on WHYY.
The teachers and school support professionals of the Pennsylvania State Education Association support WHYY and Public Radio Capital News with features, analyses, and news from the state capitol, PSEA, Leadership for Public Education.
We are back on Voices in the Family. I'm Dan Gottlieb, your host. We're talking with Bernie Siegel, physician, author. Some say he's credited with actually creating the field of New Age medicine. Bernie, when you had a problem in your childhood, your mother used to say, God is redirecting you. Something good will come of
right.
this. Don't tell me that kind of attitude didn't piss you off sometimes.
Oh, yeah. I will. I'm glad you understood.
Well, I had a mother. I had a Jewish
mother,
too.
I used to think she just doesn't want to get involved. But, you know, I used to spend a lot of time talking to God with the door shut in my bedroom so that they wouldn't send me to a psychiatrist. But, you know, but ultimately what happened was I would have an event that upset me that didn't, you know, wasn't what I wanted. But a few months later, something better would happen. And I'd think, God, Dan, my mother was right. So she ultimately changed my view of the future. And again, Norman Vincent Peale's mother, he said to me, she used to say, Norman, if God slams one door further down the corridor, another will be open.
Well, but I guess my point is about your anger at your mother, even though, you know, she was right. But, you know, we're talking about self-pity.
So, yeah, but it wasn't anger. See, I grew up loved. I mean, and so if you had a problem, my mother would say, do what'll make you happy. So she kept in touch with feelings. But I knew that she wasn't saying it because she didn't want to get involved or didn't love me. This was her belief. So, you know, did I agree with her? No. But this was something that, you know, I learned to put up with. And as I said, it may have been therapeutic for me and God to talk because I think I got to know myself better by having those internal conversations. And I see this in our support groups. You know, when somebody says they have a problem, you say, oh, here, go read this, do that. They look at you. And they're not ready for it.
Well, you've put out the God word a few times. So tell us what that means for you, God.
Well, God is loving, intelligent, conscious energy. That to me, it's the intelligence behind creation. You can say higher power if you want to. I mean, you know, talk to an astronomer and ask them where the universe came from. So it's I would say whatever they say, that's God to me. You know, that there's an intelligence behind it. It couldn't have happened if there wasn't. That there's love behind it, because if I cut my finger, it heals. So if the Creator never cared about me, that wouldn't happen. So as I say, and that it's conscious, because consciousness is not limited to the body. I know this from my own experience, near-death experience, as well as having messages from those who have died through mystics and mediums, and hearing voices myself at times. So to me, consciousness is non-local and exists aside from the body. And there's just fascinating things that I stay open to in life and the process of creation.
Let's go back to the phones. We've got Bridget on the line. Bridget,
hi. How are you? I was calling actually because I was really intrigued by what you were talking about in terms of the doctors and, you know, their feelings and hiding of their feelings.
Mm.
I had my first daughter. She was born almost 4 years ago. Was expected to be totally fine, full-term infant, and actually became very quite critical when she was born and wound up having a stroke and her lungs collapsed. And, you know, for me, being a first-time mom and dealing with, you know, the doctors and their language and, it just was so refreshing when some of them were very human towards you and really felt that they were feeling, to some degree, what you were feeling. And it, I found it very hard to deal with doctors that I felt like were otherwise just, you know, not empathetic at all, or, you know, even I don't even care, but weren't even faking to be, being empathetic. And I just, you know, my daughter now continues to, you know, maintain constant care. You know, she has hearing loss and she sees many specialists. And, you know, when I talk to other parents, they're like, oh, you can never cry in front of the doctors. They need to know that you're strong, that you're not dealing with an emotional basket case. And, you know, I just disagree. I say, you know, if a doctor can't handle a mom crying over their baby or their child, then they have no business being my daughter's doctor.
Right.
I'm not necessarily saying that they have to cry or they have to be as emotional, but my emotions are a very real part of this experience, experience that I never expected to happen, and this person that I've had to become that I never expected I would have to become.
Jennifer, how are you?
Jennifer?
Yeah.
I'm Bridget.
Pardon?
She's Bridget.
Oh, I'm sorry.
I didn't know who you were talking to.
I'm sorry, Bridget. Tell us how you are.
What do you mean, how I am?
Tell us, if I met you in the street, how is your life?
You know, I would tell you that it's hard. You know, it's hard when you have,
good for you.
Know, I would rather be sick. I would rather have
issues.
Yeah,
of course.
Right. But the fact that you're honest.
You can't. What?
Let me say this, Bridget. When people say to me, how are you? I say, are you ready to hear the truth? Or I often say, I'm depressed, out of my antidepressant, and my doctor's on vacation. And then the other wounded people talk to me, and we have therapy. So the fact that you don't walk around saying, I'm fine, give yourself a pat on the back. And don't forget that other people are wounded, too. See, when you're out walking, they don't see your daughter. Put a bandage over your eye, and they'll see that you are wounded, and they'll talk to you about their troubles and their wounds and their kids. And for a lot of doctors who haven't had the problem, they don't understand, and they don't know.
And, you know, to that
but
point,
let me
when
add this,
I...
That the way to find a good doctor is to walk in and say, are you
criticized?
Well,
wait. We've got everybody talking.
All right.
Once.
Let me add one more thing, Bridget, because to everybody listening, you want to find a good doctor, go into your doctor or plumber and say, are you criticized by the people you work with, the people you work for, and your patients. See? So nurses, family, and patients criticize you. Every good doctor says yes, because they learn from their mistakes. So that if you go in and say, you're not showing me any emotion, they'll say, I'm sorry. But the others will say, you're the only problem. I have a lot of patients like you, and you're the only one. Get a new doctor.
Bridget, I want to thank you so much for your call, and I do wish you the best. I hope you are able to find lots and lots of caring doctors and others in your life.
And what your daughter needs is love, and I'm sure you're giving it to her.
Bernie, I want to get to this business of caring doctors, because, you know, I go to doctors a great deal in my life, and I know who cares and who doesn't, and most, if not all, of my doctors right now are deeply caring and compassionate people. But and when that happens, I feel less alone.
Right.
But being in the most caring hands is not necessarily being in the most competent hands.
You drive me nuts in that sense, because I was trying at Yale New Haven Hospital many, many years ago to give an award to the most caring physicians and nurses, that patients would, you know, fill out forms, write letters. And the administration said to me, well, maybe they'll pick somebody who's the most caring but not the most capable. And I thought, if you hire people here who aren't capable, and are, then why let them in the door? So, you know, if all these people have their degree, they had to learn something. Yes, it's possible that somebody is more skilled than another, but the American College of Surgeons pledge reads, I will deal with my patients as I would wish to be dealt with if I were in the patient's position. I would like them to change that, and they refuse. I will care for my patients as I would wish to be cared for if I were in the patient's position. And what we know is when somebody comes out of a doctor's office and says, the doctor listened to me, and somebody else comes out and says, the doctor didn't listen, the person who's more likely to respond to treatment is the one who says, my doctor listened.
Yeah. Yeah, it just seems to me over, I've been a quadriplegic for 30 years, so I've become a bit of an expert, that some doctors are technicians and some doctors are
right.
healers. And, you know, if we're lucky, we have both. But, I mean, I have benefited from technicians. I wouldn't want my overall care in the
yeah.
hands of a technician.
Well, I always say, you know, the technology I'm very happy about, but I also want to be cared for. My father-in-law, by the way, was a quadriplegic. He was dying. I moved him to a new nursing home that was just built close to our home. And I have to tell you a little bit of humor, because I said, I'm moving him to this new nursing home so we can be with him the last week or two of his life. And they said, you can't move him. You're not his doctor. You're not in charge of his care. You'd have to pay his medical bills. I said, fine. I can afford it for a week. We moved him to the new nursing home. Within 3 days, he was no longer dying, eating, feeling fine. And I I was responsible for his medical bills now. But I said to him, how come you're not dying anymore? I never forget him saying to me, I was dying because the people taking care of me were tired of taking care of me. So I was dying to do them a favor.
Hmm.
That's the tragedy, you know, when somebody who isn't caring but is capable.
Let's see if we can get another call on. We've got Jennifer on the line. Jennifer, hi, you're on Voices.
Hi. I'm Dr. Gottlieb and Dr. Siegel. I've struggled off and on with depression, and currently I'm in therapy and you know, debating whether to go back on medication or not. I've benefited in the past from doing like relaxation exercises and also affirmations, but I wondered what Dr. Siegel had to say about the, you know, because I guess there's always controversy, but, you know, concern about over-medication for patients with depression and all.
Well, let me...
And I just was curious
about
that.
Let me say two things that may help you. I'm not opposed to antidepressants, but I don't like them solving the world's problems. I think you need to have therapy in a sense of looking at your problem. So one is, ask yourself, what words would I use to describe my feeling and see how those words fit your life. Number two, if you're hungry, you nourish yourself. So when you have depression, again, say, what do I have to do about my life so I don't have this feeling and this sensation again? And then third, WWLD. Now, that can be what would Lassie do or what would Lucy do. That literally you can change your body chemistry, see, like the drugs do. You get up tomorrow morning, say, if I were Lucille Ball, and I love Lucy, you see, and I'm acting like her today, what would I do today? And start acting like somebody who isn't depressed.
Well, and
you change your chemistry and your life.
I would add on to that. You know, they say in AA, you know, fake it till you
right.
make it. There. I do want to comment about depression. That it is a very serious illness. My attitude about depression is it needs to be attacked aggressively. So I agree with Bernie that you need to do everything you can, and we know that meditation, we know exercise, we know voluntarism, doing meaningful things in your life, all those things help depression in addition to psychotherapy and medication. If you're too depressed, you're not going to have the energy to do all of those things, so do whatever you can. Often it's medication that will help you get the energy to be able to do all the other things that you need. Thanks so much for your call, Jennifer, and I wish you the best. Bernie,
yeah.
You're getting to be an old cocker.
Yeah.
So how's your health, and how do you feel about your death, and what's going to happen after you die?
Oh, death is not the worst outcome. I'm on the board of directors of heaven, so I know that. You know, because just think about Noah. See, God comes up and says, I'm going to eliminate everybody on the planet except you, and Noah doesn't bargain for others. So I can tell people that when you die, you become, to use words of William Saroyan, the author, dreamless, unalive, and perfect again. I have no fear of death. When I get tired of my body, I'll leave. I have seen this with my parents, my in-laws, who have had no problems with life and death. But while I'm here, I'm here. And I don't see myself as a certain age. Because if I don't know what time it is, then how can I get older? So what I suggest to people is do what makes you lose track of time and you won't age.
We've got about a minute left, and you're going to be talking at the Jefferson Center
yes.
for Integrative Medicine.
Yep.
You've been dubbed as one of the founders of New Age Medicine. Jefferson has a Department of Integrative Medicine. Tell us about language and how that's evolved over the years.
I don't know what you mean by...
Well, what's the difference between integrative medicine?
Oh, well, you know, it used to be called complementary. I was the president of the American Holistic Medical Association. The organization started even to get so that physicians could come together and support each other. You know, all of us who were called crazy, that you got on the famous talk shows because people were yelling at you, so it was an exciting show. And now it goes from complementary, like something added...
Yeah.
to traditional medicine,
well,
integrating.
And that really shows our evolution. Bernie, I want to thank you so much for joining us. It's been really an interesting show. My guest has been Bernie Siegel, author of many books, including Love, Medicine, and Miracles. He'll be at Jefferson on May 9th. Next week, we'll be discussing our relationships with our adult children. It should be a... quite an interesting show. There's a controversial issue. By the way, if you want to see Bernie Siegel, call 800-JEFF-NOW. Well, if you've got a question, show idea, or comment, you can email us at voices@whyy.org. And you can find me at drdangottlieb.com. Well, the engineer for today's show has been Al Banks. Elizabeth Perez-Luna is our executive producer of radio content. Our executive producer is Mike and Scott. Voices in the Family is produced by Gita Simons. Elisa Walters is our associate producer. And our intern is Jonathan Glick. Me, I'm Dan Gottlieb, your host. Enjoy your week, my friends.
It's 12:59.